Today, I want to discuss why it is we do what we do. Meaning, what's the ultimate motivator for us to do what we do? And I think as Orthodox Jews, we say to ourselves, legitimately so, I think we take the long view of things. We say to ourselves that even though, you know, and in general we take the long view of things, even though I can't see the payoff in this in the short term, even though it's difficult for me to really see that this is going to be worthwhile for me to do, I'm going to do this anyway because I understand or I believe, I have faith that the path that I've chosen is going to be the best for me, for the world, for God, in the long run. Would that be fair to say in general, broad terms? What are we all doing here? You know, you gave up a more comfortable life for something that's based in a certain belief system and faith. It's not based in knowledge, but it's based in trust. And some people say, well, and we all actually, I'll say it this way. We all decide our tolerance level for this question. To what degree am I willing to bet the present on the future? So, you understand what I'm saying? So some people will say, yeah, of course I have faith, but I'm only going to bet a little bit. Right? I'll bet, to be honest with you, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. That I'll bet. But more than that, I won't bet. Other people say, no, I'll bet Shabbat on the future. Other people say, I'll bet. I won't work on Shabbat. I'll forego the benefit. I'll forego the material gain of Shabbat.
Oh, okay.
You understand?
Okay.
But that's a bet. Because what's the payoff?
Right. Okay.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, you're losing. You're giving up something. Other people say...
Full rate transaction.
What?
Full rate transaction.
I don't understand. You're a lawyer or whatever. Exactly. I mean, whatever. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, but it's a calculated bet. You know, would you bet if you didn't think that there'd be a payoff?
No.
No, nobody would. Right. So obviously, the more you believe in the payoff, the more you're going to bet. Everybody understand what I'm saying? Yeah, I think I mentioned this last week. We were discussing the Kollel stipends. I was discussing I give an Israeli a ride to work sometimes. So, like, I try to figure out, like, what are the Israelis talking about? Because us Anglos, you know, we just talk with each other. So I said, what's your attitude about the Kollel stipends? And, you know, I think they don't talk about it very much. They really just, like, they try to avoid politics. They do? So he says, you know, everybody's, like, not really so much in favor of it. He said, you know, if the argument is, the argument of the Haredim are, we are doing this for the state. We are fighting for the state. You know what I'm saying? So they say the following. Okay, what would they say to the following suggestion? We will give you the stipends and we will pay for your learning in Kollel on one condition, that before you receive any money, you sign a document saying that you give all of your Olam Haba for this learning to the state of Israel.
That's good.
Would they agree? How many people would sign that document? What's that? No, that the state needs a schuyot. The whole argument is our learning is for the schut of the state, of the Medina. They're fighting with their guns, and we're fighting with our learning, with our Torah, and we believe in that to a large degree. So fine, you say okay. What? Your schut olam haba. Your spiritual
payoff.
Right. Payoff, bank account.
The payoff isn't in this world, it's in the next world.
Well, I want to take it now for the state of Israel. You understand what I'm saying? What? If you could, would you sign such a document? Would you just even sign a document like that? You wouldn't mean Kollel, okay. It's a very interesting question. If you really say you're not doing it for yourself, but you're doing it for everybody else, then you should be willing to give it up. You're not doing it for yourself. You know what I'm saying? And I think fairly. I think it's a great idea. Because if you want me to pay for it, great. But then I should get the benefits. You know, there's always a very interesting calculation about Yisachar and Zvulun. Right? If you're learning Kollel and somebody's supporting you, so then the idea is, in theory, that the person who supports you is getting your merit, getting your zchut.
All of it or something? Well, you share it. You share.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You said the same thing. If you said every day when you go to learn, you make a declaration that I am learning for the zchut of Eretz Yisrael, from Medina Israel.
You do? That's great. Okay, why did you say that?
In your equation, then okay. That changes the equation a little bit.
Why?
You're giving up your Olam Haba, you're saying I'm going in with the intention of doing that way you get to share it.
I mean, okay. I'm just saying, so what, the level of the...
Share it.
What?
I don't think they would even share.
You don't think they would share? Then it's hard to argue that you're really doing it for somebody else. That you're fighting on behalf.
It depends on the wording. Would you say it's for Am Israel, for Medina Israel?
I don't know.
Eretz Yisrael.
Eretz Yisrael.
It doesn't have a lawyer.
Well, if the state of Israel is signing your check, you know, the money isn't coming from Am Yisrael, it's coming from Medinat Yisrael.
Right.
So it's a very interesting discussion, correct? So you should be willing to give, if you're willing to take the state's money, you should be giving your state your schar, I think.
How much is the schar?
It's really a teeny amount of money. I don't want to get into the particulars because it's really ridiculous. But okay, because the reason I bring this up, the level of the bet you're willing to take, obviously, is because this is the nature of, according to many mefarshim, and we're going to discuss it hopefully in a little bit of detail, the debate between Yaakov and Esav over the soup.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I think so. Okay. So, we're going to read the psukim, as always. We're going to try to understand, because Yaakov's actions are strange at face value. Well, you could just line them all up. They could have a little gallery over there. Okay? Yaakov's actions are unusual and questionable and demand explanation, as we're going to see. I mean, at least at face value. And we have to understand them. We have to try to understand it. And obviously, our level of trust and emuna and faith in Yaakov Avinu versus Esav is going to have some play in that. So please open up to Perek Kaf Hei, chapter 25, Pasuk Kaf Zayin. We'll start with Kaf Zayin, because we're going to get to Kaf Zayin. We might. I don't know if we'll need that.
Okay, if you use it, you'll find it.
That's true. I couldn't find the small one. Okay. Perek Kaf Hei. No, go ahead. Go ahead. Oh, Perek Kaf Hei Kaf Zayin. Chapter 25, verse 27. Vayigdalu ha-ne'arim. The youths grew up. Vayhi Esav ish yodea tzayid ish sadeh. V'yakov ish tam yoshev ohalim. Right? Esav was an ish, a man, who yodea tzayid, knew how to trap. Ish sadeh, a man of the fields. And when Yaakov was ish tam, it's always very interesting to try to translate. Tam is?
Pure.
Simple, pure, wholesome. Tam, to mimut.
Is that the same word we use for taste?
No, no, tam with it's a tet. Ta'am, tet ayin mem. Tam. Mm. Right, where else do we see the tam? Where else do we see the word tam?
Pesach.
Right, one of the four sons. But he doesn't get such a good rap. Right? I often think that we misinterpret the tam. In light of the Torah, the Tam Mahu Omer Mazot, I want to understand. Just tell me straight. You know what I'm saying? It's not that he's a simpleton. He's pure. He's looking for purity. It's interesting. Okay, Yaakov was an Ishtam Shevo Halim, a dweller of tents. One gets it's so interesting. I mean, like, as we all know, our children, they're just different, right? They have different needs. They have different desires. They have different attitudes. They have different inclinations, and they're both children of Yitzchak and Rivka. It's important to remember that. I'm just going to point out the difficulty in the language. Yitzchak loved Esav, ki, because, tzayid, trapping, befiv, in his mouth. It appears that Yitzchak loved Esav on a simple level because brought him food. Okay? And Rivka loved Yaakov. All of this raises huge issues. I think we've discussed it before. Okay, but you can go back and listen to the tapes. But now we go to the story that I want to get to, and we'll go back to these two psukim hopefully in a little bit. Vayazed Yaakov Nazid. Yaakov Nazid. It's even hard to translate. Souped a soup. Everybody understand why I said it that way?
Yeah.
Right? You translate it as, how does it translate? Yaakov, how does it translate? And Yaakov
boiled a stew,
but that's not what it said. It doesn't say Vayavashel Yaakov Nazid.
No.
It says Vayazed Nazid.
He stewed a stew.
He souped a soup. Okay. Vayavo Esav min hasadeh v'hu ayech. And Esav came from the field, and he's tired. Vayomer Esav el Yaakov. Esav says to Yaakov, Hal iteni na min hadom hadom hazeh ki ayech anochi. Hal iteni na, pour it down my throat from this red
stuff.
No, this red. I mean, hadom hadom hazeh, from this red. Okay, because I'm tired.
This red.
What's that?
From this red. This red.
This red. This red.
This.
This. Okay. Okay. Whatever. Hazeh of this. From this. This red. Ki ayef anochi, because I am tired. And then we have a little commentary. Al ken kara shemo Edom. That's why they called him red. Right?
It makes no sense, because when he was born, he was red.
He was called red, right? He loved red. Okay, and by the way, it's not really good. Not really a good thing. People who love
red.
The color red makes you think of? Blood, anger. But anger because of blood. Right, you know, my blood boils, I become angry. Anyway,
it's
not a good thing.
It's so pretty, color.
What?
It's also pretty.
It definitely calls your attention, but it's not it's a pretty color, but it's...
What? You need to add white to make it pretty.
Yeah, all right, okay, I got you, but I don't. So, by the way, I find, what's the most interesting word to me, but from what we think of Esav, what's the most interesting word to me in this pasuk?
The nah makes
nah,
sense.
Nah, right, please. Now, you don't think Esav would say, hey, give me food, you know what I'm saying? So then, he didn't say that. He says, hey, please give me food. You know what I'm saying? You know, like, Cookie Monster never said, oh, do you have Cookie Monster you guys are from?
Yeah,
okay.
No,
okay.
No.
Okay, he doesn't say, please, cookies. He says, cookies. You know, he wants the cookies. And he says, but Esav says, halikeini na.
It's like when you scream, you have food, but they never won't get anything if they don't say please.
Okay, fine. Okay, but it's just out of place. So, Vayomer Yaakov. Yaakov says, Michrach hayom et b'chorat chadli. Sure. I'll be happy to feed you, my tired and hungry brother, starving from the field, on one condition.
He doesn't say it's on a condition.
What does he say?
He says,
Sell me your b'chorat. Fine. Vayomer Esav. Hine enochi holech lamut. Behold, I'm going to die. V'lama zeh li b'chorat. What do I need a b'chorat for? I'm going to die. Okay? So, i.e., okay, you can have the b'chorat. I'll give you the birthright. Give me the soup. Okay. Vayomer Yaakov, he shavali kayom. There's a green chair. There's a chair in the door. Yeah, in the desk.
There.
Right over there. Vayomer Yaakov. Yaakov says, he shavali kayom. Swear to me.
Today.
What doesn't say that?
Like today.
Mufarshim are really stuck on that word. Kayom. Swear it. Vayishavalo. He says, I swear. No problem. Vayimkor b'chorato Yaakov. You got the b'chorat. Vayakov natan le'isab. Lechem unezid anashim. Not only did he give him soup, he was nice enough to give him. He threw in the bread, right? You know, okay. Vayochal, it's like they throw in like the breadstick when you get the soup. Vayochal vayesh, he ate. Yeah, it was very nice. Vayakom vayelach, got up and he went. Vayizviv, what?
Awesome,
Vayivez Esav et habechorah, and Esav desecrated the bechorah. Yes. Who's the good guy and who's the bad guy in this story?
Yaakov, the good one.
Yaakov's a good guy, yeah. And Esav's the bad guy.
Because of the way it's interpreted that he.
I just read the story. I read the story. Imagine if I told you this.
I think Yaakov took full advantage of.
I say again, who's the good guy and who's the bad guy?
Is that a valid contract if there's like
no?
No.
Like if there's
Correct.
It's not
well, let's talk to the lawyers here, right?
It's not a valid contract.
Not a valid contract.
A, they're not witnesses. B, he was.
Well, forget the witnesses. The Torah was witnessing.
Okay.
Yeah.
He was duress. It was complete trickery.
Why is it trickery? It's not trickery. He's told him
he wasn't drunk.
Give me your birthright, I'll give you soup. That's an
but there's no condition here. There's no indication that he wouldn't have given him the soup if he didn't sell him the
book. He wouldn't have sold him the birthright if he didn't give him the soup to save his life.
It's not fair market value.
Not fair market value.
A bowl of soup is not equal to
excellent question.
Who knows that he's buying it for that amount?
So Rina's a Pashtan. Rina's, okay, very good. Rina's saying.
And it's not clear that the soup is payment. The soup could be a sealing the deal, that now that we made the deal, let's sit and eat the soup.
Hold on one second.
That's not my own idea.
I know, it's not. Rina's not making this up. It's appear. Where does it appear? In? Well, she brings it down. It appears in Rashbam. A couple of the Mefarshim say.
So you froze in the bridge.
Money.
I'm clear. It's money.
Right,
paid for. Paid fair market.
The only problem with what these Pashtanim, and by the way, why do the Pashtanim or why do these Mefarshim say this?
Because he's Yaakov.
Well, then explain. Let's draw out the problem. What's the problem?
It can't make him into.
The problem is, look at this story. Imagine we came home and your kids are fighting, right? What are they fighting about? One kid was making barekas in the toaster oven. The other kid came home from starving from a very long basketball practice, right? And the first kid said to the second kid, give me some berekas. I'm starving. I'm really hungry. And the second kid said to the first kid, I will be happy to give you berekas today if you give me your Game Boy, your Game Boy usage for the rest of your life.
There is no if.
And now they're arguing. And now they're arguing because the younger child says to the older child, okay.
There is no condition written in the sentence whatsoever.
I will be happy to give you berekas. Will you give me your Game Boy usage for the rest of your life? And now the second child is saying to the first child, I get your Game Boy. And the first child is saying, are you stupid? I was hungry. Do you really think I meant to give you the Game Boy? Okay, now you as a parent come home and have to arbitrate this discussion. Right? What do you say? What, an agreement was made?
How can you put your brother in that position when you know he was starving?
He was hard.
That's not a valid
kind of...
That's not a nice thing to do.
What? First of all, right, my response is, it's arguing about Game Boy, I am out. I don't discuss these things. But in general, like, does it make any sense whatsoever? It's not. This is how you treat your brother. He's hungry. He's starving. So you take advantage of his hunger in order.
He's not taking advantage. It's trying. It he needs to get the birthright from him.
And get it any way he can.
The best way that he can.
By
taking advantage of him.
By
using his weakness.
Excuse me.
Isn't that the definition of taking advantage of somebody? You are weak. I will take advantage of your weakness.
Esav is a trapper. That isn't what he does for a living, take advantage of the weakness of other creatures and figure out ways to get out of them. So,
are you saying trapping is an evil profession?
No, I didn't say Esav's evil at all. But then why is, if Esav's doing it on a daily basis is not considered evil, then why is Yaakov doing it on a Wednesday basis? Sorry, well, I'm finished.
Yes.
To the king of trapping... There's no way the Yaakov's going to be as good as Esav at trapping.
Esav,
anyway.
He's a hunter. He's not a...
You talk about...
Yes, that's
trapper.
Right. That's his job. He's a hunter.
He's a physical job.
He's hungry.
Well, they tell us he's a
special. All right, everybody now, this is like a fascinating, heated discussion. All I'd like to point out, and I think it's very valid to point out... And I think...
Talk about...
Wait a second. All the Midrashim are confronting this fundamental problem, which is Yaakov doesn't look very nice. In fact, if you think about it, even in light of what we know about the Avot, Yaakov looks terrible.
Like whitewashing the
story. What?
It's like whitewashing the story.
Okay. And I think it's really kedai, just as parents on Friday night, let's read the story. And I understand because our children are taught first to Midrashim.
Can you read it without the prejudice of saying that Yaakov did something terribly wrong?
What would you say? Just use my story. What would you say about this story? Well, how does that sound to you?
A game boy for the rest of your life is something that second child really wants, and wouldn't want to give up. But what if the story were, I'll let you have my berekas if you let me have your learning time with Abba every single night? Okay, even worse. I'm not saying that's a little bit different in that if it's something that the second child doesn't actually value, then does it become a different game?
So now we come into the Mepharshim. But the question itself is a very powerful question. The whole story should really bother us. The story of Yaakov. So let's go back now. Yes, we're going to start with Rashi, we're going to the Midrashim, and even the Ibn Ezra. Please, God. Okay, yes.
Is it possible that Yaakov felt totally justified following up on what Lord said? Because he really thought that he should have had the birthright. I mean, never mind, he came out holding on to the heel, etc. So he clearly came...
Other than birth, right, he should have the birthright.
But he should, because he deserves to be the Bechor.
Why does he deserve to be the Bechor?
Not deserve, I would say maybe he felt that for the good of...
The world. Isn't it interesting how we all feel for the good of the world, that what I get is going to be best for the world?
But he is
right. My success and my taking advantage of my brother is okay. You know why? Because I'm looking out for the future of, you know, the world.
Klal Yisrael.
It turns out that it happens to be true. But that's his mother's decision, not his decision. Well, I also wonders, like in the end, what's the use of this story? Is it a binding contract? Is it sold? Does he really get the Bechorah in the end?
He doesn't know
the
value.
What?
Esav doesn't know the
dog. Ah, okay. Well, that raises it.
Maybe he knows the value, but it's not valuable to him.
Ah.
Right.
Okay. Let's go back.
How could he have... I can't imagine that he had the Bechorah and he didn't know the value of it.
I think it's interesting.
What is the value?
Especially given that Yaakov favored.
I was about to ask this question.
No, but Yaakov didn't explain it to him.
What is the value of the Bechora? What is the Bechora? What is your birthright?
A special place. To be the Bechora is a special place.
What does it mean? What are you selling? Tachlis, on the contract. I'm selling my birthright.
You are the one. You are the next one to inherit from
the
tradition.
The property, the money. Oh, it's money. Okay.
I think it's the Brit Ben Haftarim.
You think it's
the Brit Ben Haftarim? He didn't want it.
You think it's religious?
You know, 400 years, your descendants are going to be slaves in a land that isn't theirs.
It's very hard to read things after having read all the Mefarshim without the Mefarshim.
I don't remember that. I haven't read that in a long time. I'm saying we spoke a few weeks ago about the Brit Ben Haftarim, and what's going to be for Abraham's descendants and how scary that is and how Abraham doesn't know that the end is going to be so good and what it's going to take till you get to the end. I'm not sure he so wanted that for his descendants. He's the hunter, the trapper, the one who gets the immediate instant gratification from the food. He doesn't want to wait till whenever Yates Uber Hushkadol.
Very good. Very nice. Okay. Good. Now we get to the discussion of what's the Torah really telling us is the discussion between Yaakov and Esav? Because obviously we want to understand we're Bnei Yaakov, so we're going to be prejudiced to Yaakov, and I think legitimately so. And so we want to understand where's Yaakov coming from? What's the point of this story? Especially, I don't necessarily know if the Bechorah was ever sold. Esav did denigrate the Bechorah, but did he sell it? Meaning, was there ever a transaction? Did anybody ever come on and say, enforce it later on? Yeah, why did Yaakov later on have to go and trick his father? What he should have said is, Dad, we need to talk because I hear you're going to give Esav the blessing. And I just want you to know, he sold it to me for a bowl of soup about 30 years ago. So, please bless me.
What's the significance of just before the story, the Torah telling us how Esav found favor in Yitzchak's eyes and Yaakov found favor?
We'll talk about that in a second. I mean, that's also a difficult question. Wait, what's the nature of it? Without a doubt. The sale went through?
He says, swear to me today, I swear on it.
And he sold her.
Okay.
The sale went through.
I sell you. Okay. Devorah, I would appreciate if you would give me 20 shekel and I will sell you all of the land in China. And you give me the 20 shekel and the sale goes through. Okay? What happened?
Legally?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Right.
Nothing.
So the sale went through, he sold it to him, but to what end? Did Yaakov, what did we get in the end? What did Yaakov get? Did he get the land? Did he get better than his brother? Was he over his brother in the end? Was he more successful? Was he more powerful? What did he get?
His father's love.
What? He got his father's love?
No.
Well, didn't get that. That's for sure he didn't get.
False pretenses.
He didn't get his father's love. He didn't get his father's love. He got his mother's love. So what did he buy?
In order to
he felt more powerful. Maybe he felt that it was his right to do what he later did.
Exactly. Because he sold it.
But that's great. But he wasn't going to do it anyway. The only reason he did it. Why did he do what he did later on?
Because Rivka told him.
His mother forced him to. So he wasn't going to do it.
Well, but when she said it.
Oh, only then could he justify it because
right.
He said, "Well, he sold it to me anyway." Okay. Maybe that's definitely true. Let's read on. Vayaze Yaakov, let's go back. Vayaze Yaakov Nazid. Vayavo Esav min Nazireh B'chayeh. What is Nazid?
But if the sale would have gone through, he wouldn't have had to dress up like Esav.
That's what I said. Correct. Well, no, she's saying, Aviva saying that it went through enough in his mind that he didn't refuse his mother and refuse to go through with it.
He could have said to his father, the birthright's been sold to me.
Yeah, and what would the father have said? And what would the father have said?
No way.
Be honest.
Why?
Be honest.
What would the father have said? The father would have said, "Oh yeah, what'd you get for it? What'd you give him? What'd you pay?" Well, they were expensive lentils that day. I worked hard on the soup.
Just test to see how important it was.
Very good. Okay. If so, very nice. If we want to say that, then it's not a sale. It's not a transaction. It's a discussion. It's a debate. Right? He said, it's a test. Ah, excellent question. All the Mepharshim also deal with a very interesting halakha question, a legal question. What is the Bechora? The Bechora is a right. In Jewish principle, there's a rule called, Ein Adam Makneh Davar Shelo Ba'al Olam. You cannot sell something that doesn't exist.
That's also true.
secular. Yeah? You can't sell something that doesn't exist. You can't say, in 20 years, I am going to get XYZ and I sell this to you.
No, that you can't.
Can you?
Yeah.
It's already happened.
You can sell future profits?
No. Yeah.
What if they don't materialize?
Or right transaction. Then you lose.
So in Halacha, there's a principle called in Adam, the Or Chaim goes through it. So he says, why did Yaakov make him swear? The swearing, the oath was in order to justify, to solidify the sale. But it doesn't really help. Can I have a tissue, please?
But could Esav have sold it if Yitzchak was the one who had to transmit? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, is it his to sell? What is Nazid? Let's go back. Yazid Yaakov Nazid. What is Nazid?
Stew.
What kind of stew? Everybody knows?
Lentils.
Red lentils. Right, that's why you all serve red lentil soup on Mina serves red lentil soup on that night. Oh, no. Okay.
Isn't he making it for someone else?
Ah, very good. Let's look at Rashi for a second. Why do you serve lentils? Says Rashi. Vayazed, Lashon Bishul. Okay. Min ha'adom, ha'adom. We don't know what nazir is, it's stew. So Rashi says, some interesting thing. Adashim adumot. You see Rashi on Lamed. Red adashim, red lentils. V'oto hayom met Avraham. Avraham died that day. Why did Avraham die that day? Shelo yireh et Esav ben beno yotze letarbut ra'ah. Esav is getting older, right? And he's about to turn bad. I'm sorry, no, Esav ben beno. He shouldn't see his grandson. Avraham died, so he shouldn't see his grandson go over to the dark side. Okay? It's clear it's Esav. Ve'ein zo seiva tova shivticho HaKadosh Baruch Hu. God promised, isn't it? He promised Abraham, you will die b'seiva tova, happy and content. And nobody is content when their grandson turns over and starts robbing liquor stores. Okay? So therefore, lefikach, in God's great compassion, katzar HaKadosh Baruch Hu heishani mishnotav. God took away 5 years from Abraham's life. Abraham, I'm doing you a favor. I'm taking you early. She Yitzchak chai kuf heishana. Yitzchak lived 180 years. Vezeh kuf ayin heishana. Okay, and he, but Abraham died only after 175 years. Ubishel Yaakov adashim lahavrot et ha'avel. Yaakov cooked adashim, cooked the lentils, as a sudat havra'ah. You've all heard that, a sudat havra'ah. Okay, as a bereavement meal, v'lama adashim. Why lentils? Shedomot legalgal. They are round. Shehaavo avelut galgal hachozer ba'olam. Because mourning is a circle that returns to the world. It's the circle of life. So interesting. Rashi says, like, why adashim? This is a very common idea. What's Yaakov cooking? He's cooking a sudat havra'ah for his father. Along comes Esav and says, hey, food. Give me food. You know, what? Please. Right? What food? I'm cooking it for dad. What happened? Oh, grandpa died. Don't care. Pour it down my throat. Hungry anyway. So, sell your birthright to me. What did he want to sell him? Let's go on in Rashi. I'm going to see, by the way, it's interesting to know, I'm just going to show you Rashi, and as you all well know from your from other classes that you might take, Rashi is always based upon? On? The Midrash. Very good. But if Rashi doesn't follow the Midrash, that's something that's interesting to take note of. We're going to see that here Rashi does not. What were they arguing about? Mikra Chayom.
Sorry, which Pasuk?
On Pasuk, let's give Rashi on Lamed Aleph. Lamed Aleph. Vayom Yaakov, Yaakov says, Mikra Chayom et Chorat Chali. Okay? B'choratcha. What really was Yaakov buying? What was Esav selling? B'choratcha. Rashi says, Lefi sheha'avoda b'bechorot. Right? What was the b'chorah? The birthright was to serve in the Beit HaMikdash. As we all know, before the Chet Ha'egel, before the Jewish people sinned, the golden calf, right? The avodah was intended, the service of God was always intended to take place not by the Kohanim, but rather by the firstborn, by the Bechorim.
That's why you do a
Pidyon HaBen, that's right. The Bechorim belong to God. So the birthright isn't a response, is a mitzvah, but it's also a responsibility. It's an obligation. So Yaakov says, I want to be the Bechor. So what's the discussion? What's the argument about? If Yaakov wants the birthright, what's he want to buy from Esav? Let's look at in a broad sense, according to Rashi.
The Kohanim.
Broader. What?
The
service. Right, service of God. I want the spirituality.
You
can't buy that.
What?
Well, I guess you can.
Yes, you can. Can't you sell? What? Can't you sell to somebody else? I want the spirituality. Okay? Amar Yaakov. Yaakov said, I'm following in Rashi. Ein Rasha Zeh Kedai Shi Yikarei B'la Kadosh Baruch Hu. This low-down good-for-nothing doesn't deserve to serve in the Beit HaMikdash, to serve God. Read on Rashi. So what does Esav say? Yaakov says, I would like to buy your right to serve God in the Holy Temple. And Esav says, how much?
Please.
Yaakov says, a bowl of soup. Esav says, Hine anochi holech lamut. I am going to die. V'lama zali b'chora. This is always the second question. What is Esav's logic in being willing to sell the b'chora? So obviously it'll depend on what you think he's selling. Okay? So what is his logic? Why is he willing to sell the b'chora? It says Rashi. Amar Esav, skip the parentheses. Ma tiva shel avodat zu. He says, remember, Esav is out in the field. He doesn't spend all his time studying in the tent. So he says, what am I selling here? What are you asking for? Like what? Mativa, what is the nature? What is the nature of this work? Amar lo, kama azharot v'onshim umitot liyumbo. Very dangerous work.
If you don't do it right,
you're dead. Right? It's a life and death. If you're tamei and you worship in the Beit HaMikdash, if you don't worship properly, if you eat the wrong food at the wrong time, and this is, by the way, true. It's very dangerous work, the Kohen work. You gotta know your stuff.
It's too risky.
Kisha otash shaninu, we learned Elohim should be mitah. For example, these people are chayav mitah. Shtuya yayin upurei rosh. If you're drunk and you serve the Beit HaMikdash, dead. Amar, he says, Ani holech lamut al yada. I'll never survive. Hine anochi holech lamut. If I do that work, I'm dead. Im kein machavetz liba. What do I need it for? So what is Esav say? In the eyes of Rashi, what's Yaakov selling? What's the birthright? What's Yaakov buying? The right to serve in the Beit HaMikdash. What's Esav selling? Why is he selling it for a bowl of soup?
It's a death sentence.
It's a death sentence. Who needs it? He says, knowing me, I'll never survive it. I'll come in one day, having a few too many, go to work, be a little hungover.
Why does he change his mind?
What do you mean?
Later on, he wants that.
I know, we all change our minds later on. It's a good question. According to Rashi, I'm not sure. Good question. Okay?
Okay? It's human nature, what you do in your young...
What you do in your
teens or your early 20s compared to what you do in your 50s, 60s, 70s. Totally different story.
See, I don't understand that now. I mean, we just finished the elections yesterday in the States. That's what they all say now. Ah, everybody had their crazy college years. Like, it doesn't matter. You could have killed, God only knows what. Ah, college.
Well, the frontal lobe is not fully developed until you're about 24, 25.
That's the new science, right? That you're still a child until you're 30.
No.
That is the new science.
But it's scientifically proven that the frontal lobe, which is where a lot of your decision-making comes from, is not fully developed.
According to Judaism, does it matter? You're obligated when you're 13. Grow up.
Right.
Sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, you have different college experience from the people that are talking about.
Why is that?
Because you don't
know. Why? I don't know. People are raised...
Stupid decisions when we're young.
Yes, we make stupider decisions. Oh, okay.
Except for people who got married when they were young. And
Okay. Heira katuva bishow. So Vayiv is Esav, the Torah denigrates Esav, Aman Brashan Lamedalin, Shibiza Avodato Shel Makom. He desecrated the Avodah of Hashem. Esav said, spirituality? He said, here's the question. Do you want to live in the physical world? Do you want to be a hunter?
He's saying he's not worthy. That's
no, he's not. Well, he's saying, I'm not willing to make the sacrifices and take the risks and do the things that need to be done in order to live the higher level of living. What? Right, so it's not worth a bowl of soup.
He'd rather live.
What do you mean live?
He'd rather live than go through that and then die.
And then die. Well, I look at it a little more. He had the desecration. If he really thought he wouldn't survive, then he's doing the right thing. But I think it's more than that. It's not I think I won't survive. I think, I don't want to make... I don't want to do that, yeah.
He doesn't want to change his way.
Right. I don't want to have to make the sacrifices of not being able to show up drunk, for work in the morning.
But
So if I go hunting and I shoot my arrow the wrong way, so I kill the tree. What's the big deal? Yeah.
But it's also, you know, he's just making decisions for all his grandchildren.
Don't we all? Yes, we do. Okay. That's Rashi's interpretation. I want to go now to the Midrashim.
Yeah, the Midrashim. Yeah. Is Hashem saying that Yaakov made a mistake in tricking Esau with the bowl of soup? Is the Torah saying we should learn from that?
Hashem's not saying anything.
The way, or like the Torah, what we should learn.
Is the Torah making a value judgment about Yaakov's actions?
Just saying what it is.
Right. We don't find a value judgment. It's for us to make the value judgment about Yaakov's actions.
There's a value judgment.
Well, Yaakov's always right.
Right.
Yeah, Yaakov is right. Yeah, you're correct. I mean, but it's not in there. It's not in there. Right. Well, Esav desecrated it, but does that mean Yaakov, to put him in that position, was appropriate? Was Yaakov's behavior?
I think that the fact, I mean, with him, he was saying that the section before, she was focusing on a different pasuk, but I think it's important to note that in the section before, Kitzayit Befiv, especially if you're moving into Midrashim now,
uh-huh.
and the Midrashim talk about that that Asa trapped was his father, that
right.
he used his words to trap his father. Again,
wait,
I
let's explain,
what
let's
I
explain
said
the Midrash.
Before,
explain the Midrash.
The Midrash says that Esav used to.
It says, "By Yaakov, by Yehav Yaakov, Yitzchak et Esav ki tzayid befiv." The words literally mean tzayid, his trapping, just the meat he trapped. Befiv was in his father's mouth. Midrash says, "No, read it a different way." Ki tzayid befiv.
Ki tzayid befiv. That he used to trick him with his mouth. He used to ask him.
He trapped him with his words.
That makes sense.
That's you think that's pshat. Especially in light of later on, where Yitzchak says to Esav, "Hey Esav, before I bless you, do me a favor, go hunt that venison. I love that meat." He said explicitly.
No, I think it makes sense because Yitzchak was a very special person. Why would he love him? He's not a good, Esav's not a good person. Why? Because he was
I personally think. So I've said this before. I think that Esav. I've always felt that Esav gets a really bum rap. In the Midrashim. And the reason why Esav gets a bum rap is very simple. Because Midrash judges Esav not on Esav as a person, but Esav as an archetype and a historical personality. Esav always represents
the anti-Israel.
Which is, no, Esav representing deeper than that.
Esav Sonei Yaakov.
Rome, Christianity, right, Edom. Esav always represents Edom. So the battle between Esav and Yaakov is the battle in the Midrash between Judaism and Christianity.
Midrash is forced to make Yaakov
good, right?
Because the Torah says Yaakov is tam.
Right.
They have nowhere else to go but to say Yaakov was correct. Everything he did was correct.
Correct.
So they have to back that up. With.
Correct. But it doesn't. We're divorcing. We are more interested. The Midrash is not interested in Esav necessarily as a person. The Midrash is more interested in Esav as an archetype, as a historical figure, as a representative of his
nation.
Descendants, of his nation. Whereas I'm interested in Esav as a person. And if I read the stories of Esav as a person, I see Esav as a brute. Esav as a bit crude. But Esav, who loved his father, was dedicated to him, devoted to him, would do anything for him. Right? And in the end, can you imagine how you would feel if your mother went behind your back and told your brother to go steal your blessing from your father? You know what I'm saying? So like, Esav as a person is different than Esav in the Midrashic archetype. And that's important to understand. You understand what I'm saying? And so therefore, Esav in the Midrash is always going to be wrong. Esav and Rashi is always going to be wrong. Because remember, Rashi is coming from the background of, what do we choose? What do we as a people choose? What does Judaism choose? Do we choose the life here and now? And this, or do we choose the sacrifices that I'm going to have to make in order to live a life of service and spirituality to God? And that's the question according to Rashi. Hinei anochi olech lamut. I'm going to die. Lama zeli b'chora. Why should I make sacrifices that will endanger me, that will cause me to make, like, why do I need 613 commandments? And if I don't follow the 613 commandments, but then what's the punishment?
You die.
You die. It's tossed. You know, you're in danger, right? There's so much more responsibility. But of course, with the responsibility is the privilege. Lama zeli b'chora. Who needs it? I'd rather just do my thing. It's a huge ideological, theological debate. Let's go even deeper. The Midrash takes it one step even farther back. Says the Midrash, Yazid Yaakov Nazid. The whole story has an underlying theme of death. If you think about it, just from the beginning to the end, Yaakov is Yazid Nazid. Okay? They're mourning. It's the day of mourning. What's the symbology of the day of mourning? On a day of mourning, what do our thoughts turn to? On the day of mourning,
our mortality,
What's circle of life?
What circle of life?
The circle of life that's represented by this person who just died, and then new life being born.
Yeah.
And maybe going on to Ha'olam Haba.
Oh, well, so interesting that you brought that up. Going on to what?
Ha'olam Haba.
What is that?
Concept of eternity.
Oh, very good. Okay, you should know there's a guy, interestingly, there's a guy now, his name is Christopher Hitchens. Anybody remember Christopher Hitchens?
Yeah.
What?
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. He's a very well-known commentator, he's in English. What? He's anti-Israel. It's not clear he's anti-Semitic. He's not very pro-Israel. Oh, wow. You're political today. Okay. I think he has lung cancer, I'm pretty sure. Right? And he's an avowed atheist. So, there's a whole movement of prayer for him, a movement of prayer on behalf of Christopher Hitchens.
And he's an atheist.
And he came out and said, I really appreciate you all caring for me, but I'm sorry that you're wasting your time. You know what I'm saying? So
he
like,
what?
What a loser. If he gets cured? You know, if he gets cured, of course you know what he's going to say.
Science
saved me.
It was a freak of nature.
Correct. He doesn't believe in God. Do you understand what I'm saying?
He's quite brave from where he's saying. Yes.
Why? Quite brave. No, he's not.
Right.
According to him, he's not.
He's just
right. He's going to nothingness. It's fascinating to me, by the way, that this, we have biblical times. According to the Midrash, this is the debate. To the Midrash times, basically in the middle of history, to today. This debate has never stopped. It's the same debate. We're talking about the same things, and this makes sense a lot to me, that humanity is consumed with the same issue. When a person confronts death, he confronts the fundamental question of, what am I here for? Because what happens next is based upon the question of, what are we doing here? So it's Vayazed Yaakov Nazid. Yaakov sat down and he made a Nazid. He made a lentil soup. And I thought it was so interesting that Rashi says the lentil soup talks about, Rashi says specifically, Galgal HaChozer Ba'olam. Right? The circle of life, you called it. But there's another circle that's even broader and deeper than that circle that I've always understood. Why do we serve eggs? Why do we serve round things? Right? What's the idea of the symbology of the round?
Eternity.
Right. Right. It goes back. Everything returns. That's the symbology that I've always understood, that we celebrate in when a person dies. We eat the round thing. The Avel specifically eats the round food. The bagels, of course, nowadays, right? Thank God for bagels.
But
there's no beginning and there's no end. That's exactly, but no beginning, no end to what?
To anything,
to life, right? That this is not, that I believe when this person died, it's not that he died, that he's gone. It's not that he's an end. I'm not serving a club sandwich. No, I'm serving a bagel, right? That he returned. And he will return. Vayazed Yaakov Nazir.
And Esav just takes the lentils and uses it for a meal.
Esav comes down and he says, Haliteini na min ha'adom ha'adom hazeh. Right? Ooh, red soup. Not lentil soup. Not round soup. Not morning soup. Red soup.
He's the red guy.
I'm hungry. Right. Okay. I'll redo the Midrash.
Yeah, but it's not just I'm hungry. It's because before when he was born, it says that he was red, and it's mine.
Yaakov.
That's
for me. That's Esau. Oh, the red soup.
I'm the red guy. That's the red soup. It's mine.
Interesting. Sitting how symbolic and how deep the soup is. I'm a Debar Acher. Says the Midrash. Says the Midrash. Psikta Rabati. Yaakov Ya Yoshev Vashel Adashim. Yaakov is sitting and cooking soup. Vaisav Amarto. Ramarlo. Esav comes and says, Mara ita liyot yoshev umvashel adashim. Why are you cooking soup? Amarlo, mipneshim met zaken. Granddad died. Vani yoshev umit abel umitaer. And I am in mourning. Right? The symbol of the soup, the round, is not a symbol of mourning. It's a symbol of consolation, if you think about it. And it's not about how sad I am. It consoles us. Why? Okay. Va'anim vashel adashim lahavroto, and I cook these lentils as a havra'a, as a consolation. Havra'a, sudat havra'a. I don't know how to translate that word exactly. Ulanachamo, and to console him. I guess dad or me, whatever. Why? Kedei shehe yodea. Oh, interesting. He says so that Avraham will know heach needs to arti alav, how I was anguished over his death. Ukishi yichiyu hametim laatid lavo yihuyu ohavim li. And when Chiyas HaMeisim happens, when the resurrection of the dead happens in the future, he'll love me, because he'll know how upset I was and whatever, that I really mourned over him. Meaning, what was the symbol of this lentil soup? Why am I cooking adashim? Because I know that he's not dead forever. I believe in Chiyas HaMeisim. I believe in the resurrection of the dead, and Avram's coming back, and I want him to know, Granddad, I cooked soup for you. Amar lo. He said to him, Esav, Shote, moron, kach ata sover. That's what you think? Mishe Adam meit vekale bekevesh atid lachiot? You think that when a person dies, he's going to live again? Hu kafar b'tchiyat hamitim. V'zeh she'amar, he denied the resurrection of the dead, and this is what he said, Hine anochi olech lamut. Behold, I'm going to die. So Esav says, sell me your birthright. What's the birthright? The birthright is the future. The birthright is after your life. The birthright is something you're not going to get now. Comes along Esav and says, there's another midrash, okay? He said, this theme follows through in the midrash. Sell me your thing, okay? So he says, the midrash says, "Benoach sheba olam." Does it make any sense? The question we asked before: Adam shuno ten keara shel adashim, person who gives a guy a plate of soup. Ha'imu omer mechoret b'chorat chali. Can you imagine going to a restaurant and they say to you, "What do you have on the menu? We have lentil soup. That sounds good. How much is it?" Oh, it's your birthright. Makes no sense. Ela dvarim kashiyot be'emunah hayusham. They were dealing, this discussion is a discussion of faith, of the principles and fundamentals of faith. When Esav came home, he found Yaakov cooking this stuff. Amar kola torech hazeh lama lecha. What are you doing all this for? Sana einecha ureil. Pick up your eyes and look around. It's so interesting, the language. Look around. Kol ba'ei olam ochlim kol hanimtza. Everybody in the world, they eat everything they want. Shkatzim, dagim, remasim, besar chazir. Does this sound like a discussion in biblical times? It sounds like a discussion in Roman times. We get to eat fish and lobster and pork and crab, shrimp. Oh, right? Awesome. And what do you Jews eat? What do you eat? You eat soup. You eat lentils. And the soup becomes a symbol for willingness to do with less and to push off the pleasures of the world. Amar lo Yaakov. Yaakov said, V'im anu osim kach. If I do this, heach naaseh le'oto hayom, what will be on that day? Which day? The day of the world to come. Olam haba. Zehu yom shemagia matan scharan shel tzadikim. The day where the world, the ultimate reward, will come for the righteous. Says Esav. What does Esav say back? I'm gonna die. Not I'm going to die. You're going to die. And you're sacrificing all the pleasures of the world for nothing. You are wasting your time. You're wasting your effort. You're wasting your energy. Amar lo, v'chiyesh olam haba, o shema yesh tchiyat hamitim. That's what you believe? There's a world to come? There's resurrection of the dead? Adam Rishon shemeit, shema chozer ubalo. Adam Rishon died? Where is he? What happened to him? Noach, I don't even know olam. Noach, dead. Abraham, granddad, he went around the whole world spreading spirituality, and where is he now? Dead. He's coming back. Amar lo Yaakov. So Yaakov said, "Be'im o'ein olam haba v'lo tchiyat hamitim." B'chora zola malacha. Says, okay, you really think so? Like, after the discussion of the soup, after the discussion of the lentils, then Yaakov said, you know what? If the soup means nothing to you, if the symbology of the soup, of the cycle of life and the resurrection of the dead, really means nothing to you, tell me, would you sell your birthright for a bowl of soup? Esav said, you know what? I would. That's Vayivas Esav et HaBechora. It wasn't a discussion, it wasn't a real transaction per se. It was an ideological discussion. It was a theological discussion. What does it mean to you? What do you really believe? Are you willing to bet your Olam Haba for a bowl of soup? And I'm willing to tell a bet. If you would go to Christopher Hitchens and you would say to him, tell me, sir, to what degree do you not believe in the world to come? If I were to tell you, I will give you a bowl of clam chowder today for all your merit in the world to come, will you sell it to me? Would he do it?
Sure.
He would.
If he's truly an atheist.
That was the, or truly didn't believe in the theology of a benevolent God and a world to come. What are you, and I started by asking, what are you willing to bet on the future payoff? And the more you believe in the payoff in the end, the more you're willing to bet. The less you believe in the payoff in the end, the less it's worth. To some people, in the end, the payoff in the end, isn't worth a bowl of soup. And to us, Yaakov believed totally the opposite. Yaakov believed the payoff in the end is so much more worth, it's worth my entire life. It's worth anything I could give, any effort I could make, any sacrifice I could make in order to live a life of spirituality, because that payoff is really worth it. And I think that, like, I was giving a shiur yesterday, and it's so interesting because one of the women who was in the class, like, somehow the topic came to Tchiyat HaMetim. And she said to you that she struggles with it. Like, why is Tchiyat HaMetim so important? You know, it's in Shemona Esrei, v'ne'eman atah l'hachayot metim. Rambam says, this is a really good series of classes somebody gave. Utchiyat HaMetim, resurrection of the dead, yesod misodot Torat Moshe. Right? It's one of the principles, the foundations of Torat Moshe. Ein dat v'lo dveikut bedat yehudit l'mi shelo yame'amin bazeh. Right? You are not Jewish. You do not believe in Judaism if you don't believe in the resurrection of the dead. Okay? Veda, is that, okay. And he goes on, he says that. And he says, like, that we know that this is the 13th principle. Right?
There's no mention in the Torah.
No. It's in the tradition. But it's a fundamental principle. And it's so interesting. The Chazal see it in this. They see it everywhere. It's got to be about that.
And not higher on a level that I understand, but like people say that that's maybe a reference to the luz, which is the bone that you're supposed to be resurrected from.
I never heard of this. This is fascinating. So I would say yes. Okay.
No, I mean,
yeah, it sounds good. Fits into what I'm saying. So of course I agree. You know, but it raises these issues for us. Clearly, the Rambam says it, and clearly this is a fundamental principle in Yahadut. And so throughout history, it's easier to understand why we needed Tchiyat HaMetim. Because Jewish life was very much about this Yaakov versus Esav, right? He gets the hunting, he gets the venison, he gets the cool stuff, he gets the pleasure, he gets the benefit, and we get the lentil soup. We've always been the people of the lentil soup. And today it's more of a challenge to still nonetheless appreciate that I need to, the idea of Tchiyat HaMetim is I push off to some degree. I push off the benefit of this world. I push off my physical reward because I believe that when a Kadosh Baruch Hu brings me back, like there's the spiritual benefit la'olam haba. Tchiyat HaMetim et tzadikim bilvad. Right? Belief in Tchiyat HaMetim demands righteousness.
No, I'm sorry.
What?
Tchiyat HaMetim is only for tzadikim. Only the tzadikim will come
Kriyat HaMetim demands righteousness. Right? You know, if I will believe in it, it makes demands on me, very strong demands. Because if I don't believe in it, what? Do you understand what I'm saying or you don't?
Even if you believe in it, if you're not considered a tzaddik, you aren't going to get Kriyat
HaMetim
according to
the Rambam. That's true, okay? But...
It's
a big question. It's a difficult question. But I think this idea of, and I think all of us, where do we fall? You really want to know? I think all of us made pretty big bets. We're willing to sacrifice a lot for the payoff in the end. Meaning, do we lead the lives that we lead? Are the choices that we make motivated by the here and now of the Esav, or motivated by the payoff in the end? Obviously, it's a spectrum. We're not Tzadikim Gemurim, we're not Yaakov Avinu, but hopefully we're following his direction. But it gives us something to aim for. And the choices that we make are guided by the principle of Yaakov, that I understand and I appreciate. My faith has guided me to say that the choices that I'm making, the sacrifices I'm willing to make in my life, are such because I believe and I have faith and I have trust in the Kadosh Baruch Hu that they're worth it. And I think that that's something to be cognizant of and conscious of in the Esav-Yaakov debate. Right? Esav was willing for a bowl of soup. We take it the other way. Yaakov wouldn't have given it up for anything. He would have given his life for it. His father, Yitzchak, gave his life for it. So give your life, because God wanted you to. No problem. Right? We're not Yitzchak, but we certainly understand and appreciate that we have to follow in his footsteps. Okay, we'll stop here. Have a good week.